And that just seems wrong.
How so?
If you're trying for secrecy, I'd think any movement by the cam would attract attention, Apros said. So letting it drift seems to be exactly what you wouldn't want.
Agreed,
Cyanda said.
On the other hand, if this is a fraud like we're thinking, maybe Jixtus just has a flair for the dramatic.
Except that he's trying to sell it as the real thing, Apros pointed out. Just seems sloppy somehow.
I get your point, Cyanda said. If we can talk the Klar into giving us a copy of the longer version, maybe we'll be able to find out for sure.
Maybe. Apros hissed out a breath. Thank you for your time, Senior Captain.
No problem, Cyanda said. And keep at it. If there's one thing I've learned serving with Admiral Arulani, is that small details can turn out to be more important than anyone expects.
Senior Captain, we've got incoming,
Vimsk announced from the sensor station.
Light cruiser, Clawcrest. It's the Orison, ma'am.
Mid Commander Shrent, signal Captain Roscoe,
Zyenda ordered, settling herself firmly in her chair. And with that, she was out of time to come up with anything fancy or clever. As she'd told Apros, she'd just have to lay it out and hope Roscoe listened.
Tell her it's urgent that I speak with her.
More movement, Senior Captain,
Vimsk added.
Two Dasklo destroyers changing orbits. Looks like they're moving to intercept the Orison.
Senior Captain, I've got Captain Roscoe, Shrent said, keying the comm over to Zyenda's chair.
Zyenda hit the mic key.
Captain, this is Senior Captain Zyenda, she said. We have evidence showing that the vid Jixtus gave you is...
Sorry, but I'm a bit busy right now,
Roscoe's voice came back, sounding gruff and distracted.
I've been told the Myth have placed a big floating spy platform here, and I intend to find it.
Captain, this is important,
Cyanda tried again.
The vid is a fraud. Do you understand?
Faintly, she could hear the sounds of conversation from the Orison.
The ships are all fakes, she said,
raising her volume in the hope of cutting through the verbal clutter.
Was Roscoe even listening to her? Captain Roscoe!
There it is,
Roscoe said, her attention clearly on whatever her people were doing and saying.
Bigger than I expected. I wonder how many people Thrawn has stuffed inside. Ramis, are we even going to be able to tow it in?
There was an indistinct reply.
That's all right. We'll figure out something. Maybe Senior Captain Zyenda can lend us the Grey Stripes tractors. I have to go now, Senior Captain. We'll talk when we get back.
Captain Roscoe!
They've cut off the comm, Senior Captain, Shrent said. I'll try to get them back.
What was that all about?
Apros asked, frowning at Zyenda.
No idea,
Zyenda said, the back of her neck tingling.
There was something very wrong here.
Mid-Commander Shrent?
Shrent shook his head.
Sorry, ma'am. They're not responding. Those two Dasklo destroyers are still moving toward her,
Wickiv said.
Maybe she's talking to them. There's no evidence of any comm activity from the Orison, Shrent said.
Apros, pull up the specs on that ship,
Cyanda said.
I want to know its towing limit.
Yes, ma'am,
Apros said, working his questus.
Do you want me to check on the Myth spy platforms, too?
Get me the Orison's towing limit first, Zyenda said. Wickiv, I'm seeing an aspect change. What are they doing?
Looks like a yaw pitch rotation, ma'am,
the pilot reported.
Seem to be lining up on a new outward vector.
Vimsk, track along the Orison's likely vector,
Zyenda ordered.
I want to know what they're aiming for.
The Dasklo destroyers are picking up speed,
Wickiv said.
I'm guessing they've spotted the turn, too.
afraid that Rosku is going to cut and run, Apros commented. Here's the towing data, Senior Captain.
That's not the plan I was hearing from her, Zyenda said, looking at her chair displays as Apros's numbers appeared. As she'd expected.
The Orison could tow pretty much anything up to a medium-large freighter.
So how big was this myth spy platform she thought she was seeing? Vimsk, what have you got?
There are no likely systems along that vector cone, Vimsk said. In system, none of the planets line up. There are a few asteroids stretching out toward the outer system.
And with a horrible shock, Zyenda got it. Shrint! Emergency comm system! She snapped. Get Rosku's attention! I don't care how you do it!
There she goes!
Wickiv cut in, as the Klar light cruiser disappeared from the viewport and displays.
Looked like an in-system jump.
Track it! Zyenda ordered. And go to battle stations!
Senior Captain?
Apros called tensely over the noise as the battle station alert sounded. You heard Vimsk, Zyenda said, cutting off the sound. All across the bridge, the officers were hunched over their boards, and on the status displays, the patterns of standby lights flicked to green as the Grey Shrike's weapon systems came fully to life.
The moving camera that you spotted in the vid. It wasn't just moving. It was doing a slow inward orbit, like an asteroid.
She pointed at the tactical.
Like one of the asteroids Rosku is chasing down.
Oh, hell.
Apros bit out, his eyes going wide.
You mean like the asteroid at sunrise? But she said it was a myth spy platform.
She was told it was a myth spy platform,
Zyenda retorted, looking at the sensor display. Vimsk had refined her data now that the Orison's final exit vector was known, but there were still at least 5 possible targets the Klar ship might be headed for.
But which one?
Zyenda felt sweat breaking out on her forehead. The Orison was charging straight into a trap, and the Greyshrike was the only ship that could react fast enough to save it. But there would only be time for a single in-system jump. If Zyenda guessed wrong, Rosku and her crew were dead.
And the hell of it was that it would be a guess.
The Orison had made a brief hyperspace jump, arriving almost instantly somewhere else in the system. But its image and drive emissions were all heading back from that spot at the far slower speed of light. Depending on how far Rosku had gone, it could be seconds, minutes, or even hours before the Greyshrike or anyone else on Ornfra could physically spot it.
Senior Captain, I think she missed,
Wickiv said.
What?
Zyenda asked, frowning.
I think she missed with her jump,
Wickiv repeated.
It's been too long. She should have shown up by now at one of the 3 most likely asteroids.
She might have jumped to one of the farther ones,
Apros pointed out.
No, she's right,
Zyenda said, with a renewed bit of hope.
Those others are all too far away. If Jixis is trying to drive the Klar and Dasklo into an all-out war, he needs all of Ornfra to see the Orison get destroyed.
Preferably with a couple of Dasklo destroyers nearby that the Klar can blame it on,
Apros said.
And they won't jump to confront Rosku until they can see her.
So the Orison overshot and has to come back,
Zyenda agreed.
That gives us a little breathing space.
Vimsk, is there anything about any of those asteroids that makes it stand out?
Nothing I can pick up at this distance, ma'am,
Vimsk said, her face pressed against her glare-hooded monitor.
But the missile trap at sunrise didn't give off anything I could get either, even when we were right up beside it.
Apros muttered something under his breath.
Any ships out there that are just hanging around?
He asked.
It'll probably be something small and unobtrusive.
Scanning now, sir.
Apros, what are you thinking?
Zyenda asked.
They're not going to leave it to automatic sensors and firing systems, he said. Not something this important. They'll have someone nearby to keep an eye on the asteroid and pick the right moment to fire the missile.
Good call, Zyanda said.
She really should have thought of that herself.
Vimsk?
Still scanning,
Vimsk said.
But if they're running on standby, I may not be able to pick them up.
We need to get closer, Aprof said. Wikiv, work us up an in-system jump to someplace midway between the two closest asteroids. Hopefully that'll put us close enough.
Put it somewhat closer to the closest one, though,
Zyanda added.
I'm still leaning toward that one.
And after you get that course, start us on one from that point to midway between the second and third, Aprof said.
We may not have time for a second jump before the Orison walks into the trap, but we have to try.
Got it!
Shrent interrupted, a note of triumph in his voice.
Apologies for the interruption, sir, but I've got the status reports from Patrol Command. They've got a freighter listed as undergoing repairs in that area.
They didn't tow it in?
Zyanda asked.
The freighter refused, Shrent said. Said they could fix it themselves, and didn't want to pay Blue Dock fees.
Sounds like our controller,
Aprof said.
Wikiv?
Got it,
Wikiv confirmed.
How close do you want us, Senior Captain?
Zyanda looked at the tactical and the new mark where the freighter's position had been added. With Wikiv's skills with in-system jumps, she could put the Greyshrike well within combat range of the freighter. A thorough pelting with plasma spheres before it knew what was happening, and no one aboard would be triggering that missile anytime soon. But the asteroid would have its own backup sensor and firing mechanisms in place, and the Greyshrike's tangle with a similar weapon over Sunrise had shown just how tough the things were to knock out. Taking out the freighter would make the Orison's destruction less precise, but no less inevitable. No. Roscoe's only chance was for the Greyshrike to get close enough to intercept her and wave her off before she got within firing distance of the missile.
Put us here, she told Wikiv, marking a spot on her Questus and sending it across the bridge to the helm station. That should keep us out of easy shot of the missile, but close enough to everything to warn off the Orison when it arrives.
Understood, ma'am, Wikiv said. A few more seconds.
Zyanda looked at the weapon status boards, confirming everything showed green.
Galoxu, are your crews ready?
They are, Senior Captain,
the weapons officer confirmed.
In-system jump ready, ma'am,
Wikiv announced.
Acknowledged,
Zyanda said, bracing herself.
This was it.
In-system jump. 3, 2, 1.
The view outside flickered, and suddenly the ship traffic was gone. In the near distance, off the Greyshrike's port side bow, was the asteroid Wikiv had brought to them.
Your rotation 70 degrees port side, 4 degrees zenith,
Zyanda ordered, searching the starscape for the freighter. There it was, 40 degrees further off to port side, and about 3 times the distance currently between the Greyshrike and the asteroid.
Apros, pull up the record of our battle with these things at sunrise. Roscoe will probably need some convincing.
Shrent, stand ready to signal the Orison the instant it...
And then, flicking in from the outer system, the Orison was there. Face to face with the asteroid, 2 kilometers away, in perfect position to be destroyed. Family fleet officers, Roscoe had long since recognized, weren't nearly as adept at tight warship maneuvers as their counterparts in the expansionary defense fleet. Some of that was lack of regular practice, but most of it was simply the fact that such maneuvers normally weren't needed. Most defensive combat took place inside a planet's gravity well, or close to the edge of it, where an attacker's maneuverability was restricted, so in-system jumps weren't emphasized in training. Fortunately, like Roscoe herself, the Orison's pilot had come out of the Ascendancy military, and the Defense Force emphasized such training almost as much as the expansionary defense fleet.
His first in-system jump was long and wide, exactly as Roscoe had instructed, and his second was equally on the mark. In fact, it was just a little too perfect. The Orison came out of hyperspace barely 2 kilometers from the asteroid. A little closer, and they would have crashed right into the thing. But they hadn't hit it, and they had it pinned with no place to go. And the Myth family was now cooked. She'd give whoever was inside a chance to surrender first. And if they refused, she was in perfect position to crack open the hull, haul everyone and everything out, and expose the scheme to the entire ascendancy. And if she found enough dirt inside, the fallout might be enough to break Patriarch Thurfian's prestige. Maybe not drop the Myth from the ruling families, but at least damage them enough to alter the flowing web of relationships that existed in the Syndicure. And any such disruption could only work to the Klar family's advantage.
Combat range, 2 ships, the sensor officer warned. 1 active warship, 1 dormant freighter.
Roscoe looked at the tactical. So one of the Dasklo destroyers had followed them? Her lip twisted as the ship's ID came up. No, not one of the destroyers. Just the Greyshrike and that insufferably annoying senior Captain Zyenda.
Captain, the Greyshrike is hailing us,
the comm officer added.
Ignore them, Roscoe said. Send me up a tight beam signal to the spy platform.
Captain, the asteroid is rotating,
Ramos said, peering over the sensor officer's shoulder.
Roscoe eyed the sensor display. It was rotating, all right. Not very fast, but it was definitely on the move. Turning its main sensors toward the Orison to see who exactly they were dealing with? Or was it perhaps turning their own tight beam transmitter around so their upcoming conversation would have more privacy? Either was fine with her.
Calm!
Tight beam is ready, Captain.
Roscoe nodded and keyed her chair's mic. Jixtus hadn't been completely certain that Thrawn was personally involved in this project, but knowing the man as she did, she personally had no doubts. And when Patriarch Thurfian fell, she would make absolutely sure that Senior Captain Thrawn fell with him.
Asteroid is rotating, Senior Captain, Galoxu said tensely, bringing the missile launcher to bear.
Zyenda nodded, her throat tight. The Greyshrike was too far away for Galoxu or Vimsk to pick out the hex pattern that would definitely tell them which of the 2 Chiss warships was the attacker's target. But she had little doubt as to which one the hidden controllers would choose. The Greyshrike was far enough away to have at least a chance of destroying or disabling the missile before it could ever cover the distance between them. The Orison, on the other hand, was a sitting flashfly. And it was the Klar and Dasklo families that Jixtus seemed determined to force into open warfare. A Klar family ship destroyed in a predominantly Dasklo system might be all it would take.
Shrent! Still ignoring our calls, ma'am.
Fine, Zyenda bit out. If Roscoe wouldn't talk, she'd just have to give the stubborn idiot something she couldn't ignore.
Galoxu, sequential laser burst across the Orison's bow.
Yes, ma'am,
Galoxu said, his fingers moving rapidly across his board as he set up the shot.
Senior Captain,
Apros asked, a note of warning in his voice.
I'm banking on her being the type to come charging at us to demand an explanation, or at least to tell us why shooting at her was a bad idea,
Zyenda said.
If we can get her to move, even a little, it'll buy us some time to make her understand what she's walked into.
Galoxu, fire!
The bridge lit up with reflected light as the lasers cut across the empty space between the Orison and the asteroid.
Fire again,
Zyenda said.
Trent,
Keep trying.
What the hell are you doing?
An outraged voice boomed over the bridge speaker. Syenda twitched involuntarily, even as she belatedly recognized the fury-distorted voice as Roscoe's.
You're in danger, Captain! She called. That asteroid...
This is my prize, Irizi!
Roscoe snarled.
You will back off, and you will back off now!
Orison's moving, Senior Captain,
Vimsk murmured.
But it's not...
Zyenda looked at the display, her heart sinking.
The Orison had turned toward the Greyshrike, bringing its main weapons to bear on the larger ship. But it wasn't moving away from the asteroid, as Zyenda had hoped it would. In fact, if anything, it was drifting closer to the floating rock. And with the Orison's flank now presented to the hidden missile, it wouldn't even have the slightest chance of surviving an attack. Zyenda hadn't made the situation any better. She'd just made it worse. Somehow, she had to find a way to fix that.
And if you think you can intimidate me or order me away, you and the whole Irizi family can go straight to...
Zyenda took a deep breath. This was her only chance.
Shut up, you blithering Aztuk!
She bellowed. It was a word that Zyenda had seldom used, and never to another officer's face. But despite that, or perhaps because of it, the word and the sheer ferocity behind it had the desired effect. For the first time since both ships arrived at Ornfra, the Klar captain was shocked into silence.
Now listen carefully,
Zyenda said, her voice low and under rigid control. Her own bridge had gone totally quiet, too.
That is not a spy platform. It's an artificial asteroid shell concealing a remote-controlled missile. A big, nasty, hull-shattering missile that can blow open the side of an armored space station.
It'll destroy the Orison, and if you had a sister ship beside you, it would destroy that, too. Do you understand?
I'm listening,
Roscoe said, her voice under the same rigid control as Zyenda's.
Arlani and I tangled with one of these things over sunrise, Zyenda said. My first officer is sending over the record now.
Across the bridge, Apros broke out of his stunned paralysis and keyed his Questus.
The asteroid is turning to line up the launcher,
Zyenda continued.
When it finishes, you and your crew will die. We need to figure out a way to get you clear before that happens.
Understood,
Roscoe said. And Zyenda could hear both the dread and steel now coloring her voice. A quick skim of the relevant parts of the Greyshrike's sunrise record, and she was finally up to speed.
I assume I can't maneuver fast enough to get out of the way. An in-system jump?
Can she do it, Wickiv?
Zyenda asked.
Depends on their sensor capabilities,
Wickiv said.
They're close enough that they might be able to detect the hyperdrive spinning up before it's ready.
Too late,
Vimsk cut in, her voice taut.
The asteroid stopped turning. The missiles lined up.
They're going to die.
Chapter 16. The seconds ticked by, each one stretching toward eternity. Zyenda stared at the viewport at the Orison and the asteroid, poised together like an oblivious whisker cub sitting beside a hungry ground lion, a knot of futility twisting in her stomach.
So that was it? She'd tried to save the Orison, and she'd failed?
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Vimsk working at her board.
Senior Captain?
The sensor officer spoke up, her voice odd as it broke the taut silence.
I checked back. Ma'am, the asteroid's been in position for nearly a minute.
Zyenda turned her eyes to the secondary sensor display, watching as Vimsk replayed the record. She was right.
The missile had been ready to fly since before the two captains even began talking about an in-system jump. So why hadn't it?
Some kind of malfunction?
Roscoe asked.
In that case, I'm getting clear.
No! No! Don't move.
Zyanda interrupted her, her brain racing. It wasn't a malfunction. Not with these people. No. For some reason, they deliberately decided not to fire. But why? Were they waiting for one of the Dasklo destroyers to make an appearance? Having both families present when the Orison was destroyed would give an extra push to their hoped-for war. A bigger slap across the face than if the Klar warship died out here on its own. But there was something else. Something Zyanda could sense, but not quite put her finger on. And then, abruptly, she had it. Their hoped-for war.
It's not a malfunction, she told Roscoe. Remember why they sent the missile into the Ornfer system? They're trying to goad the Ascendancy into war.
Yes, I got that,
Roscoe said impatiently.
Why aren't they firing?
Because they're hoping they won't have to use it, Zyanda said. It'd look better if we start fighting on our own, without any more help from them.
So what do we do?
Exactly what they want.
Zyanda braced herself.
You're going to open fire on the Grayshrike.
What?
The word came simultaneously from Roscoe and Apros.
I fired across your bow, Zyanda said. They'll have seen that as a challenge, and you need to respond.
Zyanda, I can't do that,
Roscoe insisted.
An act of aggression by the Klar family.
There's no time for argument, Zyanda ground out. They're sitting out there in that freighter with their finger on the firing button. We have to assume that if you try for a jump, they'll pick up on it and take you out before you can move. We need to give them a show while we figure out what to do next.
Very well, Grayshrike,
Roscoe said, her voice gone glacially calm.
Here we go.
And with that, a full volley of laser fire erupted from the Orison's bow and shoulder weapons and blasted across the Grayshrike's hull.
Evasive, Zyanda ordered. Pull us back into starboard. Make it look like we're trying to get away from the Orison. Roscoe, keep on us like you don't want us to get away. Not too quick. We don't want them to realize you're also moving away from the missile.
Acknowledged,
Roscoe said, as a second salvo raked across the Grayshrike's hull.
You going to fire back?
One more salvo, Zyanda said. Right now I'm trying to talk you down, pointing out that this doesn't help your case against the Dasklo. Galaxu?
Barrier down 30%,
Galaxu said tightly.
You want to ease up a little, Orison?
Belay that,
Zyanda said, before Roscoe could answer.
These people know what a fake fight looks like. This one has to be 100% real.
100% it is,
Roscoe said grimly.
Let's just hope we don't kill each other in the process.
Yes, let's hope that,
Zyanda agreed.
Galaxu, get ready to return their laser fire.
The Orison's third salvo slashed into the Grayshrike.
Fire!
The Grayshrike's lasers blasted away, the focused energy cutting across the Orison's hull.
Keep us drifting to starboard,
Zyanda ordered.
Roscoe, keep your bow turned toward us. I think I've got a plan.
Understood,
Roscoe said, a subtle change in her voice.
Yes, I see where you're going with this. You've got a better handle on my position. Just let me know.
Another few seconds should do it,
Zyanda said.
Wikiv, keep us moving. Vimsk, what's happening with the asteroid?
It's holding position, Vimsk said. But the Orison is still at its targeting point.
Understood,
Zyanda said, looking at the tactical.
Another few seconds, maybe two more exchanged volleys, and the Orison would be in position.
Incoming! Apros snapped. Portside Zenith! Portside Nadir!
Zyenda looked out the viewport,
biting out a quiet curse at the two warships that had suddenly appeared.
The two Dasklo destroyers had arrived. Shrent, warn them off, she ordered.
Make sure they know who we are. Inform them that our mission has the official backing of Supreme General Bakif, and tell them we have the situation under control.
I'm not going to sit by and let them harass me,
Rosku said.
Be advised that if they fire on me, I will fire back.
You do that, and you'll be walking right along the enemy's path.
I don't care,
Rosku said flatly.
You get them clear, or I will.
Zyenda clenched her teeth. Only Rosku would never get to fulfill that promise, she knew. The aliens watching eagerly from their freighter would let the fight start, maybe even let the Orison inflict some damage on the Dasklo ships, then turn the Klar ship into scrap and corpses.
The Dasklo senior captain refuses to acknowledge, ma'am,
Shrent said tightly.
They say we have no jurisdiction here.
Of course they do,
Zyenda muttered.
Didn't anyone in this damn system listen?
Of course they listened. They just didn't listen to anyone except themselves. The families were folding into their own defensive rings, gathering their allies, and facing off against their rivals. The stage was set. Jixtus had made sure of that. Now it would only take a single spark to turn the Ascendancy into its private version of hell.
Senior Captain,
Apros called, gesturing out the viewport.
Look, ma'am, what do you think?
Zyenda followed his pointing finger. One of the destroyers was moving across the field of view, clearly planning to circle behind the Orison, where the two Dasklo ships would have Rosku in a crossfire. It was a standard tactic, designed to force an opponent away from their chosen position or risk annihilation. But what Apros had spotted was that the destroyer's path would take it across the Grey Shrike's bow, and, perhaps more significantly, would briefly pass between it and the distant freighter.
Do you think they're smart enough?
She asked.
Don't have to be smart, ma'am,
Apros said.
They just have to be quick.
Then let's hope they're quick,
Zyenda said grimly, shifting her attention to the tactical.
Perfect!
The Orison's subtle maneuvering during its battle dance with the Greyshrike had shifted its bow almost far enough out of line with the missile's launch vector.
Apros, set it up,
she confirmed.
Rosku, time to go. Surge forward to get a closer shot at me. That'll get you completely out of the target zone. Hopefully long enough for you to fire up the hyperdrive and make your jump before they can counter. Ready?
Negative on that, Greyshrike,
Rosku said.
I'm not leaving.
Rosku, you need to get the hell out of here.
Not with a pair of Dasklo punch cans in my face,
Rosku growled.
You'll leave, or I'll destroy you myself,
Zyenda warned.
Head start the war you keep babbling about,
Rosku said scornfully.
You wouldn't.
It wouldn't start a war,
Zyenda said.
Patriarch Rivlex might relish an excuse to take a poke at the Dasklo, but he's not going to go up against the Defense Force.
Look, Irizi,
More to the point, I need a distraction if I'm going to pull this off,
Zyenda said.
And I need it in 10 seconds. So is it going to be pride or results? Your choice.
Silence. Across the bridge, Apros was talking urgently with Galoxu, who was nodding and working the weapons board. 3 seconds of silence. 4.
Fine,
Rosku said, her voice trembling with anger and frustration.
Surge forward and in-system jump 6. Give me a count.
Silently, Zyenda let out the breath she'd been holding.
Acknowledged, Orison,
she said, looking out the viewport. The Dasklo destroyer was almost in position.
Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
There was a burst of power from the Orison's thrusters, shoving it toward the Greyshrike just enough to take it out of the hidden missile's line of fire as the Klar's hyperdrive activated. A telltale surge, and the Klar warship was gone. Galaxu, stand by! Zyenda said, watching the Dasklo destroyer. It was still on its original vector, but its acceleration had slowed as the captain saw that its quarry had escaped. It continued on, moved into position. Fire spheres! Zyenda ordered. The plasma spheres shot out of the Greyshrike's bow launchers, arrowing toward a collision with the destroyer. Zyenda watched them disappear into the starscape, again holding her breath. If this didn't work, she was going to be in severe trouble with the Council, the Sindicure, and at least two of the Nine. Be quick, she thought urgently toward the destroyer's captain and crew. Please be quick. And then, just when she was starting to think the Dasklo captain was the most oblivious warship commander she'd ever seen, he finally spotted the attack bearing down on him. The sensor display showed his maneuvering thrusters suddenly come to life, his main thrusters desperately kicking up to full power as he squirmed to get out of the way. The destroyer leapt forward and angled upward, just far enough to let the spheres shoot harmlessly beneath its stern. The freighter, lying dormant in the distance, directly behind it, its own view of the Greyshrike's launch having been blocked by the destroyer's bulk as it passed between them, never saw it coming. Lasers! Zyenda snapped as the spheres impacted on the freighter, multiple sparks of released ionic energy engulfing the ship and paralyzing its electronic systems. Take it out before they can... She broke off as the freighter disappeared in a violent explosion. She shifted her eyes to the asteroid, feeling a horrible and helpless premonition, just in time to see it, too, disintegrate in a shattering of multiple internal blasts. Damn, Apros muttered into the sudden silence. So the freighter wasn't there to trigger the missile.
No,
Zyenda agreed soberly.
They were there to keep the missile from launching on its own.
A dead man switch, Apros said. One way or another, that missile was going to do damage.
Zyenda nodded,
watching with sudden weariness as the expanding cloud of debris reached the Greyshrike and washed over its hull. Tiny pieces, of course, with nothing large enough or threatening enough to kick in the viewport's automatic blast shields. If there was one thing consistent about Jixtus's alien friends, they were very good at making sure they didn't leave anything behind that could give investigators a clue as to their identity, location, or capabilities. Still, it wouldn't hurt to try.
May Commander Trent send a message to Supreme General Bakhief, she said. Include the record of everything that's happened since we first hailed the Orison, and request that someone be sent to collect as much of this debris as possible and get it to Spasia. Maybe the UAG can dig out something useful.
Yes, Senior Captain,
Shrent said.
Senior Captain, the Dasklo Destroyer is hailing. The Captain demands to know what the... what you were doing firing on him.
Zyenda looked at Apros, noting the sour look on her first officer's face.
Put him through,
she told Shrent. She and the Greyshrike had thwarted Jixtus's plan to start a war, had opened Captain Roscoe's eyes a little to what was really happening in the Ascendancy, and had cost the enemy a powerful and expensive weapon that they'd spent a lot of time drifting into position. Now she was going to have to placate the very angry representative of one of the ruling families and try to open their eyes a little.
She sighed. This was turning out to be a very long day.
Even by Kilori standards,
which were the standards of a Pathfinder who sometimes had to be in the depths of the Great Presence for 10 or 12 hours at a stretch, it had been a very long day. It had also been a chillingly instructive one. The Pockian commandos Wingali and Thrawn had sent to commandeer the hammer had been more competent and far deadlier than Kilori had expected. But even that group paled in comparison with the heavily armed and armored troops who showed up at sunrise 2 days after the ship battle. At Thrawn's direction, and under Wingali's command, the soldiers had descended on a small mountain mining region on the surface and quickly and efficiently demolished the Grisk forces that had been running the slave operation. At least Kilori assumed they were Grisks. The presence of a Grisk warship in the earlier battle was evidence that the slavers were either Grisks or one of their client species, but he would probably never know for certain. The defender's armor was equipped with self-destruct systems that could apparently either be triggered by the wearer or activate automatically if he was killed. What little the self-destruct left behind gave no clues as to the appearance of the beings that had been wearing the armor. It was the logical extreme of Jixtus's own obsession with hiding the details of his face and body. Clearly, the Grisks didn't want their appearance known, and were willing to go to extraordinary lengths to achieve that end. The downside to their fixation was that in the close quarters inside the mines, where the battles progressed and ultimately ended, some of the Grisk casualties came from the collateral damage of their own comrades' exploding armor. Combined with the deadly skill and precision of the Pockian soldiers, and the apparently unexpected resistance of the natives themselves, a battle that might otherwise have taken days or even weeks was over by nightfall. For Kilori, it was a sobering reminder that no matter how much knowledge, power, or influence the Grisks might possess, there were still some nasty surprises lurking in the chaos. He was sitting alone in a corner of the compound's dining area, watching the red clouds surrounding the sun as it sank toward the horizon, and trying to put some of the day's more stomach-turning images out of his mind, when he had a pair of visitors. Kilori of Uandualan, Thrawn greeted him, gesturing to the alien standing beside him. This is the Magis. She wished to speak with you.
Yes, I remember you from the Aelos,
Kilori said.
How may I serve?
For a moment, the alien was silent. The dark eyes set deeply into her face, over the twin jutting jaws boring into his. Out of the corner of Kilori's eye, he could see Thrawn holding perfectly still, his glowing red eyes taking in everything. The Magus's stare seemed to fade.
No,
she said.
He will not suit.
Yet he too is a navigator,
Thrawn said.
Does he not therefore touch the beyond?
He touches, but not in a way that is useful,
the Magus said.
What do you mean, not useful?
Kilori asked, a mix of confusion and bruised pride tweaking at his winglets.
I'll place the navigation skills of the Pathfinders in the balance against any other navigators in the Chaos.
Space is not where I wish to navigate,
the Magus said.
You are of no use.
If he's of no use, we shall move on,
Thrawn said, taking the Magus's upper arm and gently turning her away.
Apologies for the interruption, Pathfinder. You may return to your meal.
Thank you,
Kilori muttered, his winglets undulating slowly with uncertainty as he watched them go. What did she mean, space is not where I wish to navigate? Where else but space was a navigator supposed to navigate? He turned back to his meal, but the food,
which had already been rather tasteless, had now lost all interest for him. He kept at it just the same, knowing nutrition was important, as he watched Thrawn and the Magus leave the dining area and head across toward the barracks, where the miners and their families were having their first evening of peace since the onset of their civil war.
Good evening, Pathfinder.
Kilori turned his head. Wingali was walking toward him from the other direction. Four armored Pakian commandos walking close behind him.
Good evening, Wingali Four-Armor Oksa, he said. I thought the Pakash had eliminated the enemy.
I ask your pardon.
Kilori gestured to the commandos.
I was speaking of your bodyguards.
Ah, Wingali said. Yes, the enemy is defeated, or so I'm told. But we stand in a wilderness region, surrounded by woods and mountain crevices. Such terrain can conceal predators and other natural dangers. You seem upset.
I am,
Kilori said, thinking fast. The Magus's comment about non-space navigation had been both intriguing and unsettling. But he didn't want it to look like he'd placed any special significance on it. Best not to even bring it up.
I was wondering how much longer Sarsh and I would be staying here before we were returned to our home at Navigator Concourse 447,
he improvised.
Returned?
Wingali asked, sounding surprised.
The Pakosh didn't hire you, Pathfinder. We are under no obligation to provide you transport to your home base or elsewhere.
Kilori stared at him. That wasn't the answer he'd expected.
You can't be serious,
he said carefully.
I navigated you here from Rapak and risked my life to assist your attack, all without charge. Surely some obligation on your part attaches to such actions.
Normally it would,
Wingali agreed.
But in this case, you were part of an attack on Rapak. As such, you are effectively a prisoner of war.
I was merely the navigator,
Kilori protested.
I played no part in the Kilji threat.
Nevertheless, you brought them to Rapak and were present during the battle,
Wingali said.
Navigators are always to be held blameless in such things.
The Pakosh have not made any such agreement,
Wingali countered.
Nor have we signed any relevant treaty.
I understand,
Kilori said, trying to calm his winglets. He'd started this conversation as a way to avoid talking about Thrawn and the Magus. Now, suddenly, it had become far more serious. If the Pakosh weren't willing to transport him off this planet, he could be stuck here forever. Or, more likely, would be stuck here until the next Grisk warship came to destroy the Pakosh and take back their mines. He had no idea what Jixtus's timetable was, but that invasion could theoretically happen at any time.
But you must also understand that it's vital that I be returned to my concourse as soon as possible.
I doubt it reaches to the level of being vital,
Wingali said offhandedly.
The Navigator's Guild will simply have to do without you for a few weeks.
Kilori's winglets tensed. A few weeks?
No, that's impossible,
he protested, trying to sound calm.
I can't be here that long.
I'm sorry, but we cannot spare a ship to take you home,
Wingali said firmly.
If you wish a different answer, you must talk to Senior Captain Thrawn.
I will,
Kilori said, standing up.
Thank you for your time and your words.
He found Thrawn outside at the edge of the mining compound, sitting alone on a rock outcropping at the edge of a patch of thick woods. The Chiss was gazing meditatively at the last sliver of sun still visible over the hills to the west, the failing light starting to fill the valley below them with twilight. An evening breeze whispered gently through the woods a few meters to Thrawn's left, stirring the branches and creating little swirling eddies in the dead leaves on the ground all around them. The Magus was nowhere to be seen, having apparently taken her search for a new navigator elsewhere. Nor were there any bodyguards in attendance. Apparently Thrawn wasn't as concerned about predators as Wingali was.
Senior Captain Thrawn?
Kilori greeted the Chiss as he walked up behind him.
It's Kilori of Wanduolan.
I know, Thrawn said, not turning. I heard your footsteps as you approached.
Kilori hadn't realized his steps could even be heard over the breeze and evening noises.
I urgently need to speak with you,
he said, as he came up beside the Chiss.
If now is inconvenient, please set a time when it will be.
Now is acceptable, Thrawn said. Before we speak, I must first apologize for the Magus's needlessly unkind words.
No apology needed,
Kilori assured him, his winglets twitching. The Magus and her strange comments could wait. Finding a way off Sunrise was the more critical issue here.
Wingali Foa Maoksa told me...
Because you certainly aren't useless, Thrawn continued. On that we all agree. You're only useless to her attempts to see through time.
That he couldn't get me back to...
Kilori broke off as Thrawn's comment suddenly registered.
Excuse me. You said she wants to see through time?
Yes, Thrawn said. You see, she's more than simply a political or social leader, as we first believed. Just as you have a connection to what you name the Great Presence, she has a connection to something she calls the Beyond. She's hoping to use those connections, and similar ones, to see into the future.
Into the future? So that was the not space she wanted him to navigate.
But how can the future be seen? Is it not created by the combined yet separate decisions of trillions of beings?
How can a Pathfinder see into the future, to know where a hyperspace path will lead to danger, and thus change the ship's course to avoid it?
Thrawn countered.
That's not how we navigate,
Kilori told him.
The Great Presence guides us away from such dangers.
Then how does the Great Presence know?
The Great Presence is... the Great Presence,
Kilori finished, wincing at how lame that sounded.
We don't know how it functions, or even really what it is.
As I don't fully understand the thought behind the Magus' quest.
Thrawn gave a little shrug.
Still, though the future is indeed uncertain and ever-changing, it may be that certain events are fixed once those making the proper decisions have committed themselves to those paths.
It would certainly make navigating easier,
Kilori commented.
If we could plot out a course even 10 or 15 minutes in advance, it would make for much easier travel.
I don't think the Magus is concerned with hyperspace travel,
Thrawn said, his voice going darker.
Her goals are more focused on the defense of her world.
Kilori's winglets stiffened.
He hadn't even thought about how something like that could be applied to warfare. But the possibilities were instantly clear. If she knew in advance Jixtus's commitment to destroy the Chiss Ascendancy, or the commitment the Grisks would surely make to take back this world, it would give her a huge strategic advantage.
You're speaking of knowing an enemy's overall plans?
He asked.
Perhaps even the sequence of a particular battle, Thrawn said.
Kilori's winglets twitched.
That seems terrifying.
Only if you're the aggressor facing such foreknowledge, Thrawn said. The mages would use it solely to defend her people. He paused. Though others, of course, have been hoping from the start that they could use it for conquest.
Others?
Kilori asked carefully.
What others?
Let us follow the history, Thrawn said. First, General Yiv brought his Nicardoon forces against the Star Nations in this part of the Chaos, seeking to conquer or otherwise subdue them. At some point, while nearly all attention was on him, Sunrise was destroyed by a civil war, orchestrated from the outside by creatures called the Agbui.
I don't think I've ever heard of them,
Kilori murmured.
I believe they and the Nicardoon are both client species of your employer, Jixtus, Thrawn said. Having pushed the people here on Sunrise into destroying their civilization, the Agbui tried to do the same to the Chiss Ascendancy. But we were able to see through their intrigues and turn back their influence.
He gestured in the direction of the recently liberated mines.
But the true genius was the successful attempt to make us believe Sunrise's Nyx's mines were the ultimate goal of their destruction. Certainly the metal is valuable, but the true prize was the mages and her ability to touch the beyond.
The mages was the prize?
Kilori asked, trying to make sense out of the whole thing.
I'm not following you.
It's not difficult to understand, Thrawn said. Those who perpetrated the deception hope that combining the Magus' abilities with those of a Navigator might expand the Navigator's view of the near future and permit them to thus use the combination in warfare.
I see,
Kilori said, his winglets rippling slowly as the tangled plan slowly started to make sense.
Only they didn't expect the mages to escape Sunrise's civil war and travel to Mapak.
Exactly,
Thrawn said, sounding pleased that Kilori was finally up to speed.
Or else they didn't recognize her value until after the refugee ships were already gone. Once they did, they faced a dilemma. The only military forces close enough for a quick reaction were the Nicardoon. So they were the ones sent to hunt down the refugees. But Yiv was only a tool, and his masters didn't want him to know the true nature of the person they were seeking. Thus, when the Nicardoon forces found Rapak, they merely blockaded the system and awaited further orders instead of invading and capturing her.
I see,
Kilori said again. There was more complexity woven into Jixtus's plan than he'd ever realized.
So after Yiv was defeated, Jixtus sent the Kilgis to Rapak to get her?
Yes,
Thrawn said, giving Kilori a small smile.
Only they, like the Nicardoon before them, would have failed. Because from the time of the Springhawk's first visit to Sunrise until the time your Kilji warships arrived at Rapak a few days ago, the mages has been with me.
Kilori's winglets went rigid.
With you?
Indeed,
Thrawn said, and there was no mistaking the satisfaction in his voice.
Earlier today, the mine workers told the mages that their enslavers repeatedly conducted large-scale searches of the planet, hunting for her. He waved a hand out across the valley. The true irony is that the search was not only futile, but unnecessary.
What do you mean?
The mages isn't the only one of her people who can touch the beyond, Thrawn said. There are others among them who could rise to her same position and ability if necessary.
Amazing, Kilori said. So all the Grisks needed to do was look for others with the Magus' ability instead of hunting for her specifically?
The Grisks? Thrawn turned a puzzled look on him. The Grisks aren't the ones behind this scheme, Kilori. It's being controlled by General Arias Nakir and the Kilgees.
Kilori's winglets went rigid.
What?
Jixtus may think he's running the operation, Thrawn said. He may even be giving the orders. But those orders aren't ultimately coming from him.
That wasn't what I heard aboard the Anvil,
Kilori objected, forcing his winglets to slow down.
General Clofip always said that he was acting under Grisk command.
Really? Thrawn said, sounding amused. He said this in your presence, did he? Knowing full well your relationship to Jixtus, and that you would report everything to him?
Kilori looked over his shoulder at the mining compound, his winglets slowing with the sheer strain of trying to follow this zigzag of revelations. Jixtus had always seemed to be in complete control. Had that been a lie? Had Crowfip actually been telling the truth back at Rapak? Worse, had it been a lie that Jixtus himself truly believed?
Why do you think the crew of Kilgee's ships are called vassals?
Thrawn continued, his voice now gone quiet.
Why do you think the controls are so simple and so well laid out that Pockian commandos could quickly learn how to fire the ship's weapons? The Kilgees aren't concerned about quality or expertise, but only in those whom they can successfully control.
They call themselves the Enlightened,
Kilori murmured.
And they say their vassals are likewise, Thrawn said. No, Kilori of Uandualon. Jixtus is also of the Enlightened, but unlike the Kilgee vassals, he doesn't know it.
For a moment, the only sounds were those of the forest and breeze. Kilori gazed across the valley, watching the darkness creep across the landscape.
Enlightenment.
The Kilgees had talked about that a lot during the time he'd been aboard the Anvil. They'd boasted about how superior their path was, and about how one day they would bring that path to everyone in the Chaos. But surely Jixtus wouldn't have fallen for their schemes or their enlightenment. Would he? He frowned as something caught his eye. Halfway down the valley, in the center of a cluster of what looked like dull-roofed prefabricated huts, something was glinting in the last ray of sunlight where it peeped through a gap in the western hills. Three somethings, actually. Their faint shimmer reaching upward from the cluster. A worship hall spire? A stray tendril of silk from some horrifyingly huge local spider? A three-lobe hyperspace transmitter antenna?
At any rate, it's time for me to retire for the night, Thrawn said, sliding off the outcropping and giving a small stretch.
His right hand brushed the belted weapon at his side, as if reassuring himself it was still there, as he sent one final gaze around the area.
I suggest you don't stay out much longer, he added. As Wingoli warned, there may be predators that roam the darkness.
I'll speak with you again in the morning. With a final nod, he walked past Kilori and headed off toward the buildings where the Pakosh had set up their headquarters and their barracks. Kilori watched until he was out of sight, then turned back to the valley. The brief triple glint had vanished, and the twilight was fading rapidly, but it was still light enough for him to see that there was a path leading down from the mining compound in the general direction of the huts. He stepped to the edge of the trees to try for a better look. If that was, in fact, a hyperspace transmitter, and if he could get to it, he might be able to send Jixtus a message. Too late tonight, of course, but maybe in the morning. There was a faint crunch of dried leaves from somewhere behind him, and without warning, his arm was caught in a solid, metallic grip. Even as he opened his mouth to shriek, a second hand locked itself across his mouth and winglets, stifling the scream into a muffled gasp. A second later, he was dragged through a gap in the outer line of trees into the forest.
Be silent,
a voice muttered in his ear.
Be silent and live.
There was no way to verbally agree to the order with his mouth covered, but Kilori managed a microscopic nod of acceptance. In the failing light, a second person moved into view in front of him. Kilori felt himself wilt with relief. He'd feared his assailants were Pakosh, or some kind of local militia. Instead, they were a pair of armored Grisks, who had somehow escaped the Pakian slaughter. The one holding him must have felt the loosening of his arm muscles as his panic faded and cautiously released his dual grips.
I am Kilori of Wandualon,
Kilori identified himself, keeping his voice low.
We know who you are,
the Grisk in front of him said.
Good,
Kilori said.
Tell me, how did you escape from today's battles?
We escaped because we were never in them,
the Grisk said.
Our task was to stay away from the mines and the savages working them at all times. We would thus remain uncounted among our forces, and free to maintain surveillance if such proved necessary. As it now has,
the Grisk behind Kilori added.
You must take a message to Jixtus.
Yes, I would be happy to do so,
Kilori assured him.
That group of huts down the valley, did I see a trilobe transmitter in their midst?
You will take a message to Jixtus,
the Grisk repeated more harshly.
Not send, take.
All right,
Kilori said hastily.
What is the message?
From the direction of the encampment came the sound of approaching footsteps and muttering voices.
You will tell Jixtus that we stand ready,
the first Grisk said.
He need only speak the word, and we will sow chaos and reap death among his enemies. We will bring him the one
who... Orgos!
A Pakian voice demanded. Instantly, the two Grisks melted back into the trees.
It is I, Kilori of Wandualon,
Kilori called carefully.
Approach.
Kilori stumbled out of his partial concealment to find himself facing three armed Pakosh.
I am here.
So we see,
one of the Pakosh said.
It grows late. You will return to the barracks.
Of course,
Kilori said, walking gingerly past them. He headed for the encampment. Kilori had been assigned a bed out of the 20 or so that had been laid out in one of the larger buildings. About half of the other beds were already occupied, he noted, as he made his way through the dimness to his cot and began to undress. Today's combat had been stressful enough.
tomorrow's efforts to come up with a plan of escaping the death trap that was Sunrise would be even more so. He'd settled down and drifted towards sleep when he was abruptly shaken awake.
Killori?
A whispered voice came.
Killori.
Killori opened his eyes. Thrawn was leaning over him, a warning finger to his lips.
What is it?
Killori whispered back, his winglets vibrating with surprise and tension.
Get up and get dressed, Thrawn said. We're leaving.
Killori's still foggy mind snapped to full alertness.
We're leaving? Where are we going?
To Chila, Thrawn said. I'm going to Chila at any rate. You'll be dropped off at Shisa, just inside the Ascendancy. Enough freighter traffic passes through the system that you should be able to pick up a job. If not, you can use the Triad transmitter there to call back to your concourse and ask your dispatcher to arrange a pickup.
Yes, that'll work,
Killori agreed, wincing a little as he sat up and started pulling on his clothing.
May I ask why this sudden rush?
I need to obtain some specialized equipment, Thrawn told him. We've just located someone who may have the same abilities as the mages.
Killori felt his winglets freeze.
You're going to replace her?
Ideally, we're going to supplement her, Thrawn said. But we won't know for certain until we can run some tests.
I see,
Killori said. And if it worked, then this newcomer and the mages would be able to see battles before they actually happened?
Oh, a shiver ran through his winglets.
More than ever now, it was vital that he make contact with Jixtus. Fortunately, Shisa and its Triad transmitter would be perfect for that task.
How soon do we leave?
He asked.
As soon as you're ready, Thrawn said. I trust that will be acceptable.
It will,
Killori assured him.
Very much so.
Memories. 10.
Patriarch Lamiov stood beside the conference room table, gazing down at the crate Lapin Sick had set there, shaking his head in a gesture of relief.
Against all odds,
he murmured, running his hand gently over the box.
Against all hopes.
He looked up and gave Thras and Thrawn a wry smile.
Against even all my expectations. You did it.
Hardly alone, Thras pointed out. It was Senior Aide Lapin Sick who found the key to defusing the situation.
But you were the ones who led Rosku to the door where that key could be used, Lapin Sick reminded him.
I recognize it was a team effort,
Lamiov said.
I also recognize that the Stibla are in debt to the myth, as I personally am in debt to you. If there is anything I can ever do for you, you have only to ask.
There is one thing,
Thrawn spoke up.
Tell us what's in that box.
Lamiov smiled again.
I believe I mentioned once that that's a secret.
I know, Thrawn said. But the question is no longer whether it's a secret. The proper question is whether it should remain one. I'm a warrior, Patriarch. The more I know about the weaponry available to me, the better I can defend the Ascendancy and its people.
You're letting your imagination run away with you,
Lamiov said, still smiling.
Whoever said it was a weapon?
Thrawn nodded toward Lapin Sick.
Senior Aide Lapin Sick.
Lamiov looked at his aide, his smile slipping a bit.
Excuse me?
Not in words, of course, Thrawn said. but in actions and responses. The first indication was actually before our departure. Your own comment, "he knows," suggested a fear that the Klar Patriarch knew something he shouldn't. That was followed by Senior Aide Lapinsek's violent reaction when he learned the hijacked transport might be captured and plundered by the Patatis. He gestured toward the box. "There's nothing I can think of that would fit inside that crate and cause such fear, except a weapon."
"An alien weapon," Thras added, a small fact connecting in the back of his mind. "The Universal Analysis Group center on Spossia. That's under Stibler control, is it not?"
"I believe that's enough speculation for one day,"
Lamyov said, standing up.
"Once again, I thank you for your assistance.
No.
Lapinsek spoke up softly. Lamyov looked down at him, his eyes hardening.
"Excuse me?"
"It's no use, Your Venerante," Lapinsek said. His tone was respectful, but firm. "They already know too much. If we let them go now, they'll just continue to poke and investigate until they uncover the truth."
He looked at the two myth.
"And in the process, they may shake loose the stones of the wall we've worked so hard to build."
For a long moment, the two Stibla stared at each other. Beside Thras, Thrawn shifted in his seat, clearly preparing to speak. Thras got there first, touching his arm warningly. Thrawn hesitated, then settled back again in his chair, leaving unspoken whatever he'd been about to say. There were times for persuasion, Thras knew. There were times for arguments, promises, and even threats. Here and now, though, was the time for silence. He counted 20 heartbeats before Lamyov finally stirred and turned reluctantly back to the two myth.
"You understand," he said, "that what I'm about to tell you is a secret of the highest order. A secret that could bring ruin to the Stibla and myth families. Perhaps even lead to the destruction of the Chiss Ascendancy."